each one individually. You cherry-picked each one, Father, for this community to help shape and direct the direction of where we will go. Father, I just pray that you would touch and instruct each one as to how and what to say and when to say it. And we are so thankful, God, and so grateful that you do think about each one in a special way. And you did pick one in a special way and brought each one to this community. And what a blessing that we can say they are to us, Father. So continue blessing them, directing and guiding them, that they will know that you are in full control of our community and of each one. And we thank you that we can call upon your name when we're in need and when we feel alone. But tonight, Father, for this business, the business of this evening and this month, we pray that you would be present and give us an open door, that you might hear what is being talked about and give us the direction we need, Father, to continue growing, continue being a blessing unto each other. In Jesus' name we thank you. Amen.
Amen.
Ready? Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could I have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Betancourt?
Here.
Councilmember Fast?
Here.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Here.
Councilmember Salino?
Here.
Mayor Beck?
Here. Okay, approval of the agenda. Is there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
No, sir, there is not.
Pardon?
None from staff.
Okay. Have a motion for approval. Do I have a second?
The approval. Thank you.
I need a second.
Second.
Okay. Call for question.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Mayor Beck?
Yes. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is the policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should be limited their comments to no more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment? Okay, moving on. Consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Would anybody on the council like to remove a consent item? Anyone from the, pardon?
I'd like to remove item two.
Number two? Okay. Anyone from the public like to remove an item? Okay. Do I have a motion for items three and four?
So moved.
Second?
Second. Five and six. Sorry. Also. One, three, four, five, and six.
Yeah, let me look. Okay. I don't know why I said consent items were one through four.
Yeah.
So.
Typo. Yes, sir.
Typo. Sorry about that. And we have a motion and a second. Call for the question.
Was his second, Councilman Salino? I apologize, the echoing, I'm getting echoing down here, so I'm not hearing the first and the second. I apologize for that. Councilman Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilman Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Mayor Beck?
Yes. Item number two, approve and authorize the city manager to execute various documents for the Reedley Family Apartments projects, items A, B, and C. Mr. Malikian?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. This is a multi-part item here related to the Reedley Family Apartments project.
I just had one quick question on item number B, the loan subordination agreement as required by other project lenders. And my question was, is if this project were to go into default, where would that leave the city on this?
if the project were to go into default, we would follow whatever remedies were available to us. It would sort of depend where they were in the project, if those funds had been expended or not. They will be funded into an escrow account and will be used as the project moves along. There are multiple funding sources that are funding simultaneously into the project escrow account, including the construction loan, the HCD loan. They're all funding really close to each other, and at that point they're pulling the permits to start the construction. So if it's early on, obviously the funding would still be available to retract. If it's later on in the process, we would have to go into a little more detail with our actions that'd be available to us.
So let me also kick in and say, generally for public funds, we take a secondary seat to a very large private funder. And in this particular case, the city is okay with this in subordinating our loan in case the project goes belly up, for instance. The reason subordination is important is because the primary biggest lender wants to get the biggest chunk back if the project goes belly up. In this particular case, the funds that we have, if we don't use for this project, will be sent to the state to go into their pot of money. So we wouldn't get these funds back anyways, and if we don't use these funds, we can use them on nothing else. They will be sent back to the state. So we're okay in having our loan subordinated for this particular project.
And just to add to those comments, the minute that the permits are pulled, the city will get back a sizable portion of that amount in the impact fees on the project, as well as the building permits. Well over half of the city's contribution will come back to us via those impact fees and the permits, which will of course be to those impact funds and to the general fund. So there is a there is a economic benefit to the city in that we can address additional capital projects with those monies.
So if what you're saying, if I'm understanding correctly, then we would be like second position as a lender to the first.
Correct. And that's very standard for the affordable housing projects that Kevin and I have worked on, that the city's low to moderate income housing monies are subordinated to the construction loans and other state funding. So that's pretty standard. And the loan's a 55-year loan, and there is a repayment if there's net proceeds available in any given year of the complex's operation. So there's a chance within the first 10 years that we would start to get some repayment of those dollars.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Yeah, may I?
Sure. I didn't have any concerns of what Councilman Bass had, but it just brought up a good question for me. This is an apartment that caused controversy when it was first established. And what I'm hoping is that when this is developed, that we have a good control. And if I think the chief would understand when
Meadowbrook was built, they had beautiful families that were there when it first started. And the first manager took care of that apartment complex very well. When he left, the second manager came in, and all of a sudden he starts renting those rooms to individuals to make a profit. He kept part of it, and the rest of it went to the owner. Okay, and it created a problem that we had to put a substation at Meadowbrook. And I hope that we can control this and make sure that those conditions are strong for this complex, so that we have to remember those people that bought homes in that subdivision, we owe something to them.
Okay. Councilmember Kevin Fabino, Community Development Department. And one of the items that we've asked you to consider this evening is the actual management plan itself.
Right.
That satisfies a condition of approval that was placed on the project. As you're looking through, you might, that management plan that you have on the dais, I mean, it is very explicit about how many people can be in so many rooms, or, you know, how many occupants can be in a particular unit, those kinds of things. So I think that's exactly why the previous council had the foresight to put that management in plan and make it a requirement. It's also maybe to be noted that the funding sources that are attributed to this project, both through TCAC, the Tax Credit Allocation Committee, as well as through funding through the Fresno County, also have very strict rules and regulations attached to that set of funding that the applicant will be required. So there's about three or four different strings attached to the project beyond just the management plan as required by the project. So it feels pretty secure. We also know that the developer is not flipping the project, meaning this is the developer who will stay from beginning to end with the project. We think that'll also increase some stability for the long haul, and also provide some security to not only residents, but you as the council.
Yeah, because I believe if the chief is not remembers it, we contacted the owner, and there was kind of an ultimatum given to him to correct the problem, and which worked out fine, but you can't take care of all the problems in a building like this in a project because it's such so large. But with the substation out there, I think it's really, really helped.
I do apologize. I should have mentioned a moment ago that the contractor is required, the operator, it's probably a better choice of words, is required to hold quarterly meetings. Not only with the existing residents, but surrounding neighbors. I think it's a period of for the first two years.
Okay.
So there'll be some outreach into the community and make sure that that's working out as well.
All right, great. Thank you.
Right. Any further questions? Any comments from the public? We have a motion on item number two.
I'll make a motion.
Second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Beck?
Yes. Moving on to administrative business, ordinances. With respect to approval of ordinance, the reading of the title thereto shall be deemed a motion to waive a reading of the complete ordinance, and unless there is a request by council member that the ordinance be read in full, further reading of the ordinance shall be deemed waived by unanimous consent of the council. Item number seven is introduction of ordinance number 2013-05, adoption of 2013 California Building Standards Code.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Every 3 years, the California Building Standards Commission reviews current codes and looks at new international codes and other state and federal codes. And on July 1st, they adopt a new set of codes for the state. So what we're here tonight for is to simply routinely adopt the new set of codes that the state of California has adopted. Now, with that, we are able as a local jurisdiction to amend some of the codes that we see may need to be bolstered. And we have done that, not in this particular instance, but we are following through with previous codes that have been amended. We went through this same cycle 3 years ago and then 3 years before that and so forth. So what you see in front of you is really no different than what you saw 3 years ago. And staff is simply recommending that the council approve the introduction and waive the first reading of the ordinance.
Question?
If I may, a few years ago, we hired a company to come go through the code book that we had and to add and delete an awful lot of things that were in the book that we didn't need. It goes back a while back.
Sure, that would be our codifier who goes through our municipal code and kind of cleans that up, and that happens from time to time.
I think that was very, very beneficial because there were things that had been there for quite some time that didn't fit with the city. And by upgrading those things, I think it really helped us.
Yeah, those get reviewed from time to time by staff, and we make recommendations, and we move forward when those changes need to be made. And this is simply reaffirming the state code that has been adopted for our use, and we've made some minor changes which basically have been in effect for quite a number of years. We just have to relist them again as the new code comes out. We need to make those references to it. Okay. So
okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further question?
I have a question here. In section number 5, it talks about automatics. Oh, on page 5, I'm sorry, at the top, talks about automatic sprinklers where required, and then it gives some detail about groups, these different groups,
all those different
AB,
occupancies,
to H5.
Right.
Are any of those like residential homes?
Yes, they are. It's included in the language. And in fact, the residential code changed the first of this year to require residential sprinklers in all new construction. So it's already been put into the code. And it's in this language as well, just because it applies for any structure over 5,000 square feet.
Okay, and so if there's an overhang, from what I'm understanding and reading this, over 3 feet, then you have to put sprinklers on the outside too?
That is correct. And that's in the residential code as well.
And is that in the state code? Or is this something we're adding to?
No, that would be in the state code. The only change that we made as a local jurisdiction is to the square footage where sprinklers are required. The state code actually will allow up to, they will allow 12,000 feet and above to require sprinklers. Our code requirement is 5,000 feet and above. We're more restrictive, and that's the ability that we have, and that's what the building official back in, I believe in 2005, had determined, and that's when this particular amendment was put into place.
And do you feel that's warranted?
Absolutely. 5,000 square feet is a fairly large building.
I do want to make sure that we're pointing out this is only in existing, it only applies to existing building if there is a major modification change to the building that changes the building's character. So this would not be a requirement for existing residential homes.
Right, right.
But if there's a developer that comes in and they're building homes that are 5,000 square feet, then they're going to have to meet that requirement, right?
Absolutely. Well, and above and beyond that, the new code that was enacted January 1, 2013, requires all residences, no matter what size, to have residential sprinklers.
Really?
Yep.
That's of January?
Yep.
So any new construction that would take place?
Sure, and we've had a handful already here in the city, and they all have sprinkler interiors. Every room gets a sprinkler for protection. There is a like a fusible link in the sprinkler so that when it detects heat at a certain temperature, it dissolves and the sprinkler starts to flow.
And that's kind of like you're saying, it's from the state code requiring that. because it's that critical or that important.
Exactly.
Right?
It's been determined to be a critical component to preserve life and property.
Right. So what I'm saying, if someone's residence was built before that,
they're grandfathered in the way they are.
I'm saying 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 square.
Yeah.
Then they're.
Yeah, it doesn't apply. Only on new construction.
That's interesting.
For residential.
Then I have one more question.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. On item six. The 2810.3, the indoor storage of pallets. What does that chapter 32 say about what the limitations are for pallet storage inside of a building?
Inside of a building, the requirements are a little stricter just due to the nature of the material, because it is a combustible material. Basically, it's any wood product or paper product that's stored indoors in large quantities. And the code actually sets parameters or limits on the size of these stacks that can be stored inside of a building. And if it exceeds a certain size, then other restrictions are kicked in, such as sprinkler systems. So I think it's up to 500 square feet, and I'm not sure how tall it is, or maybe it's 500 cubic feet. That is allowed without any kind of sprinkler requirement. If it goes above that dimension, then other restrictions kick in for fire safety.
And Chapter 32 is dealing with the storage of things like ammonia and highly combustible things like that.
Pallet fires, and the reason we have this in there is because we have several pallet yards here in the city. Mm-hmm. And just based on recent history, and even as recent as June of 2010 in Turlock, they had a devastating pallet fire at a yard. And I talked to Chief Lohman up there at the time, and that's when we actually inserted this into our municipal code, was because of that fire and the challenges they had. Typically, those fires are in the summertime when the risk is highest. Pallets are extremely intense. Our firefighters are in extreme heat, and typically it's not a good situation for all involved. The fire in Turlock burned down three businesses, and they had 10 firefighters seeking medical help as a result of that fire. So I just want to, and what it's been really good for us, the folks that have these yards have been very cooperative and have made the pallet storage stacks the dimensions that are needed. They've got the separation, which provides access and the ability to move stacks away from burning stacks and that kind of thing. So it's been a positive for us.
Okay, so you have been in contact with places that have storage of pallets, and
there's
they're understanding what this is and they're okay with that?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of cities that have adopted the same language, and that's basically where this came from. Were those other cities like San Bernardino and Folsom, and there's others I can't remember, but back in 2010 when we introduced this, I could give you a list of the cities here in the valley that have done this, only because we use a high number of pallets.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
No,
in this area.
I work so. With it every day.
Yep.
Chief, just so. For clarity, so as of January 1st, 2013, so whether it's low-income housing or self-help housing or whatever it is, that is a requirement that they would have their installation of sprinklers.
It is an absolute requirement by law.
And then it wouldn't, I mean, that would be something that
and there's
inspection
no
would take care of that, right?
I mean, yes, yeah.
So that could, if somebody's trying to cut corners, you know.
No, you know, every home that's built has to be inspected, and the plans have to be submitted and determined to be proper and with the right number of sprinkler heads and that sort of thing. So there's a inspection process that happens before the home is even built.
No, I understand. I just so. Like sometimes, like when there's developments, and even the developments that have been erected here in Reedley, it's like there's a lot of regulation, a lot of statute, a lot of law and so forth, but I'm going to say this nicely, but bottom line is that people will use the less expensive material, and sometimes some of that, like, for example, this is a good example, installation of sprinklers. When they put them in, it's like, it's junk, really. You know, they're just using a right. lot of, you know, pieces and parts and stuff, and it's covered, you know. So I'm just saying, if this is, this is something that they would check then before that, it in itself would be covered by sheetrock or whatever it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That system right. is not only, you're not only meeting the letter of the law, but it's a sprinkler system that's going to, you know, be efficient. It's going to work, you know, as like what you're saying, for the safety of the residents in that house.
Well, it's critical the right components are used, because any malfunction would be devastating if you were to leave for a weekend or something and come back right. and
so when
it failed.
When the inspector goes out there and they check that on their list, then they're, I guess what I'm asking is, they're not just checking like, okay, we got a sprinkler system in here, but they're checking for more than that, with a little bit more rigor.
There's actually a pressure test that's performed okay. on the system to make sure it holds pressure for a certain amount of time.
Okay.
So all of that is factored in
and
the inspection process.
And that is our city building inspector mm-hmm. does those sorts of inspections. So mm-hmm. that would be Gary Higginbotham or his yep. surrogate yep. that would go out and do those things. So.
Can I just ask one question? It might be a little bit off kilter here, but the packing house is right in front of the school, high school. Used to be, what is it?
Nashty
Camp.
Okay.
What do you know what they're processing there? I've been told it's birth seed, but they have big containers and.
That's what I understand, and not having been in there personally, I don't know for sure, but I understand that's what they process there is. Bird seed.
Okay. No, I just, yeah. The reason I'm asking is because when they first started, it was quite a mess when they were processing the product, and it caused a lot of pigeons, jackrabbits, cottontails, squirrels. Yeah. In fact, I had the squirrels in my building for a while.
You did.
But then they started cleaning up, and I don't know if the city approached them and had them clean up.
We've approached that particular business about some storage issues,
okay.
Not necessarily their processing.
mm-hmm. Right. The question has been asked is, what are they processing? I
right.
said, I don't know.
Right.
All right. That's great. Thank you.
Any further questions? And I open it to the public for any questions. No comment. Do I have a motion?
Second.
Okay. Call for the question.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor Beck?
Yes. Item number 8, approve and authorize the city manager to execute a property tax allocation agreement between the City of Reedley and the Fresno County Fire District regarding transfer of certain real property. Tax revenue affected by annexations and finding of no possible pursuant to section 15061B3 of the CEQA guidelines. Chief Isaac again.
Actually, I'll take this one for okay. the chief. We're going to triple team this one between the city manager, the fire chief, and the development director, because we are all involved in this in one way or the other. Cities within Fresno County, when they annex property into their city limits, are required to follow our Fresno County LAFCO policy that a transition agreement exists between the city and the fire district to make sure that services are adequately being transferred so that the newly annexed property is serviced appropriately. In that policy, it does require that the transition agreement, it does allow for a fee between the city and the fire district to offset the property tax that the fire district loses when we annex property in. For the last 10 years, we have had an agreement with the fire district, as have almost all cities within Fresno County have had agreements with the fire district, so that when they annex in property taxes shared for a certain number of years. Our last agreement did expire along with the agreements of the other cities, and for the last year or so, we've been trying to negotiate a new agreement with the fire district. It was hampered by a lawsuit between the fire district and the city of Clovis on this very issue. There was another lawsuit with the city of Fresno and the fire district, but it was really the Clovis lawsuit that was hampering our negotiations, and that led to the LAFCO board revising their policy, and I mentioned that to the council several months ago when they took their policy forward finally to adopt it. Because the LAFCO board adopted that policy, we were able to move forward with our negotiations, and what sits before you is an agreement that looks very similar to the agreement that was recently passed by Kingsburg, is in place in Clovis, will be soon adopted also by Fowler, and that agreement calls for the base year revenue that is allocated to the fire district to be given to them on the annexed property for a period of 10 years. After the 10 years, the city will receive all of the property tax revenue for the annexed property. So I want to be clear that we're talking about only the portion of property tax that was allotted for the fire district. That is the only portion we're referring to here. It is not the entire property tax. So the city still receives property tax benefit from annexing property into the city. This particular agreement is for 10 years, and it does satisfy the CEQA environmental finding of no possibility. This is probably the first finding of no possibility you will ever have done in a CEQA exemption. And that simply means that there is no possibility that this paper agreement will cause an environmental impact. So we would kindly request your approval on this item. Once it's approved by council, it will go to the fire district board for approval and will be in place for any subsequent annexations that we have that come up.
If council so elects to approve, and you're saying 10 years, that's a deadlock. It's locked. There's nothing that could modify that, change it in any way.
Actually, there is, and that is if there's a change in the LAFCO policy that invalidates the agreement, or there's a state law change in annexation policy, we'll go back to the drawing board with the fire district on the agreement. Right now, though, what this agreement means is that for 10 years, the fire district won't stand in front of LAFCO and oppose our annexations. And they have done so in multiple cities in the past. So this is a good agreement for us to have in place.
So the only way that would entertain any type of change, that's if there's a change with LAFCO or there's...
If there's a change with LAFCO.
Law or something like that, but it would not... This council or councils after this, within the duration of the 10 years, could not revisit this and say, like,
only
we want an open discussion to see if we can craft something different.
Only if both parties want to sit down at the table. There is nothing that would require the fire district to sit down at the table to renegotiate if we sign off on this agreement. Now, what we do have is a provision in this agreement that says if the fire district subsequently negotiates an agreement with a better formula for another city, we will get that formula. So if there is another agreement that's negotiated that's more beneficial to a city, we'll get that formula.
Okay, but that's the route that I was taking. So within 10 years or something like that transpires, we could revisit that. If there's a better formula, say, in 2016, 2017...
Correct. It would then apply to us as well. The chance of that happening is slim, I would say, but it is a possibility, and it is written into this agreement. So the total dollars I would point out to you that we're talking about, there is an Exhibit 2 to the agreement, and it shows a recent reorganization, or annexation, called a reorganization, for Frankwood Floral. And you'll see that over the course of 10 years, it adds up to a whole $1,460. So the total amount of money that we're talking about for the 10-year period is very small in the grand scheme of things. It's important more for the fire district than it is for us, because as they deal with all these cities that annex property and their service area gets smaller, Chief Larkin, the fire district chief, describes it as death by 1,000 cuts. So death to their budget by 1,000 cuts, because as each city annexes property, they lose that portion of their budget, and they need to be able to appropriately transition to new stations and different service areas, hence the 10-year lookout, because obviously moving fire stations is a lot of effort, a lot of requirement. So.
I believe that when all of this took place, when the county came in, wasn't there a little controversy that they wanted, if we annex county property, they wanted to be first responders? And that, I think that caused a little controversy.
Yeah, early on in the negotiations with some of the other cities, that was a point of contention. As the other cities were annexing property, the district felt they should provide the service to that annexation still. And typically, that's not a real good idea. Each city likes to take care of their own folks, sure. and crossing boundaries is not really a good thing to do. And when you're providing these types of services, especially if your service is some distance away, as in our case, you know, it would not be beneficial for us. We're closer to our own people than the district is.
Okay.
Yep. Where is the closest station?
Closest station would be Station 83 out on Avenue 400 near Bethel.
Mm-hmm.
And the other closest station would be Station 82, which is in Del Rey. It's about 13 miles away.
Thank you, Chief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sylvia is reminding me that they did ask for one change to the agreement. That's a clarification, if you could pass this on. Just a clarification to point 2A, that the not only does the agreement last for 10 years, but the annexed property tax portion lasts for 10 years. So, for instance, if we have an annexation in the 10th year of this agreement, that 10-year provision to pay them that base allocation of revenue goes out 10 years from there. So it is simply a clarification you'll see in the highlighted portion.
Okay. Thank you. So this in effect could go almost 20 years?
An annexation that is
10 for 10 years.
Annexed that is applied in the 10th year would be 10 years
10 years longer. From that date, right.
So
right.
This will be a project for a long time.
Yeah. And we've had, I think, 2 10-year agreements to date because it's a LAFCO policy. So there'll be another agreement in 10 years, and unless LAFCO changes its policy.
Any further questions?
Yeah, I have just a couple of comments. Okay, on this page 2 towards the bottom, it talks about the annexation of property, and that goes by the date that it's recorded with the county recorders.
Correct.
Office, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then okay, and in on page 3, exhibit 2, the second paragraph there, that any fee charged by the county will be passed on to the district, and they agreed with that?
Correct.
Okay. And then in item B, it talks about the interest rate. If for some reason our city doesn't pay within the 14-day period, they can charge interest. What is the interest rate based on? It says at the legal rate. What is the legal rate?
Currently, there is a Fresno County assessor interest rate that they establish. So it would be at that rate, which for this year, I believe, is 2% or something like that.
Okay, and I went over my item 3. I had a question on. Oh, the last question I had was on item 6. Can you explain a little bit about the sphere of influence and how that they can still request information from LAFCO and go against the city if we're wanting to increase our sphere of influence?
Yes, this agreement covers individual parcel annexation, but it does not cover the district's ability to oppose a sphere expansion, which is not necessarily annexing property into the city specific. And so this is just a clarification that they will be allowed to oppose or make comment to any sphere expansion we may have, but to not oppose any individual parcel annexations.
So even if the big parcel annexation was, say, 50 acres, but it was one?
They would not be able to stand up and oppose it. Yes.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any further questions? Any comments from the public? Okay. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
I'll second it.
Okay. Call for the question.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Beck?
Yes. Item number 9 is brief reports by council members. Mr. Rodriguez, we'll start with you tonight.
Two things. One, I had the privilege of attending the annual police inspection awards program about a week and a half ago, I believe, down at Cricket Hollow. I was impressed. It was nicely done. I thought our chief and other staff did a great job. It was a good turnout. There was a lot of, you know, family that were supporting both the men, women, and some of the cadets. People put a lot of time in protecting our city and providing a good conditions for us. So I want to thank the chief for the program. And then the second thing is I had the opportunity to attend the, if I get this wrong, Nicole pointed out, but it's city annual Thanksgiving gathering. That was my first one that I attended. It was nice. I like what they did at the beginning, just forming a large circle, and it gave me that symbol of friendship, team, and just strength, you know, in numbers and with a prayer. So, and then of course we broke bread, which I think is real important to do with staff as much as we can. But again, I know that there were some people behind the scenes that did a lot of work, and I want to thank them for providing that opportunity. That's all I have, Mayor.
Nita?
I'm sorry that I missed the police ceremony. I always look forward to it. I got there at 10 o'clock, and I was too embarrassed to get down. I don't know why I had it at 10 o'clock in the calendar. But anyway, I just so neat to see them all in their uniforms. It looks so nice. And like you say, the families come out, and it's just really nice with their kids. So next year for sure. Anyway, and I enjoyed the Thanksgiving lunch, and it was nice to sit down with staff and have lunch together. It was very nice. And thank you, too, for putting it together. It was nice. Thank you. That's it.
Great.
Well, I'm sorry I missed both of those programs, because everybody was coming in wanting to look good for the holiday, and I couldn't get away. Mm-hmm. So, but I would like to just say that, you know, I wish each and every one of you a great holiday, you and your family. Great.
Thank you.
Mary?
I attended the 50th anniversary party for Valentino's this last week, and that's kind of a special place for our family. When I was dating my husband, that was the first place we got to go for probably the first 6 months of our dating. Every Saturday night, you want to go eat Valentino's? Oh, sure. So that was special, and we've become pretty good friends with the owners there, and Martin and Don, and just a neat evening. And also went to the ladies' night out, the downtown, and they had a Mardi Gras theme this year, and that was a fun evening, and a lot of people scurrying around, a lot of businesses open, and they had a great selection of goodies in each place. It was a fun evening. So, and I wish I could have come for the police thing. It's this time of season is not a good season for me to get away anymore for work. But I did read about it in the paper. There were some good pictures, and I see. It just seems like the more police officers I see, the more I see coming out of the Explorer program, and I think that's really something that our city has chosen to do, and takes a lot of time, but I think it's really good preparation for our young people. So I just want to say thank you to you and your staff, Chief, for taking time to develop young people into wonderful adults.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Mayor.
Yes.
I wanted to go to that ladies' night out, but I thought it was inappropriate.
Well,
for
me
to you don't wear a mask, nobody would
I didn't have
known.
Anything to wear.
Let's see if you get quoted on that one.
They did have some good costumes, though. You're right.
Yeah, they did. It was fun.
I, too, along with Councilman Rodriguez, was able to make the police department's annual inspection and awards. We had a pretty good guest speaker there, city manager. And Chief, you did a great job. I thought the it was so nice to see everybody in uniform. It was just outstanding. Of course, we had one vocal member of your department was constantly going.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. That was the dog, so. But it was a great job. I had a great time, and it was, for me, that was kind of brings back a few memories, so it was enjoyable to be there, and congratulations. Sorry I didn't make the Thanksgiving dinner or meal that you had, but I wasn't able to make that. Thursday, I was at COG this past Thursday. Just so everybody knows, the big thing on the board there was the SB 375, and that has been passed. Its scenario B has been approved. There is some things that they're looking at maybe down the road, maybe adding into that, but it's I think it'll be into the next phase when it comes around for its fifth year. So that is a process in itself. There were so many there that was pushing another scenario, but they brought it on board so late that it did not get the communities looking at that. So I think that had a lot to do with that scenario not making it on to further down the road. Also last night, I was at the Five Cities meeting in Fowler. You were talking about the tentative agreements with the fire department, through LAFCO and through the transition agreements and stuff. From LAFCO did a good speech on that last night. So it was, and everyone's pretty much on the same page as what you guys are talking about. I believe all the agreements are going to pretty much run like what we're working on. So, and that was something that was brought up, I even believe at that time, was about if something changes, it's always going to come back to our benefit if somebody does a better agreement on one. Also, there was one other thing kind of, they actually, the fire district and somebody owning property can make an agreement if they meet with themselves separately, but it still goes through the zoning process and everything else within the city. So there's no way of going around it, but that agreement will always be an agreement before it can even move forward. So, yeah. And that's the paper issue that they're talking about. Yeah. And I don't have anything else, so I'll move it on to the city manager.
Okay. Just a reminder that on Thursday and Friday, City Hall, most city offices will be closed for the Thanksgiving holiday. This will be my opportunity to say that I am extraordinarily thankful to the hardworking city folks who won't be having a holiday off, because they're here to make sure that all of our community and all of our residents have a wonderful holiday. So we have our police, our fire, our water, our sewer, people who are on call 24/7 to make sure if something happens in this city, there's somebody to respond. So I'm very, very thankful for those folk. Saturday, we do have our tree lighting, and a special thank you to Russ for this year really working extraordinarily hard to facilitate that. The Downtown Association normally puts that together. This year, Russ did most of the heavy lifting on that, except heavy lifting of the tree. I guess I shouldn't use that pun. But he did a wonderful job. And so Saturday, we'll have our tree lighting on that. I do want to mention Small Business Saturday. So if you're going to do some Black Friday shopping, make sure you do your whatever Saturday is, Yellow Saturday shopping in Reedley. And an opportunity to show off this week, I got notice from Paul that he has officially completed his certified financial officer training and is now a certified public finance officer on one of only 540 in the nation.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Only the best for Reedley, so.
Hey, we have something to brag about, man.
We have something
to
brag
about.
I think it's neat that he turned the city around from bankruptcy to stability and then got the certification.
Yeah, maybe he can be teaching the classes
yeah.
now.
That was the test.
And then, yeah, that was his real life test. And just a reminder, you did all receive a memo that we'll be embarking upon a strategic planning and priority setting effort. We've sort of followed in Visalia's footsteps of how they do theirs annually is really the model that I was following. And so Sylvia will be touching base with you. Our thought was to have a half day off-site mini retreat with working lunch. It will be open to the public and will have to be agendized. So Sylvia will work with all of you to see what works best for you. And if maybe the half day doesn't work, we'll be flexible. So I know it's a difficult time of year for particularly citrus packers, I think, and people who have want to look good for the holidays. And I know, Kevin, you've got a couple updates and some other staff.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Kevin Fabino, Community Development Department. The big announcement is yesterday at 5 o'clock was the end of the 45-day comment period for the recirculated EIR for the general plan. We're pretty excited about that. We spent a lot of that time trying to make sure that we're all prepared to make the final push with the what's called the final EIR over the next several months. Right now, as a matter of fact, we had a meeting today with our consultant and other members of our team, and our goal is to get this to Planning Commission by January and to you shortly thereafter. So it'd be kind of a nice final push. Just to let you know, we did receive approximately, five or six comments. I think just off the top of my head, two of those comments came from private landowners. Three or four came from other governmental agencies. And one, of course, came from Consolidated Irrigation District. That was the longest of all. It was 10 pages. And we'll spend the next several weeks pouring through all that, make sure we answer any and all of their concerns. I think that's really about it, and I'll answer any questions you might have. Yes, ma'am.
I do have a question.
Sure.
When are they going to be taking down the bridge, or the half of the bridge?
So, I don't have my calendar in front of me. I thought there'd be one hanging on the wall. Oh, there it is. So as of right now, we're getting to the tail end of the relocation of a lot of the utilities. Right now, it looks like it may be as early as the 9th is when they will start. It may start as late as the 16th. But understand, this isn't going to be kind of one of those like made for TV where all of a sudden it's like, you know, bang, 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 and the whole thing drops. They'll actually take it down in small sections and it'll actually fall to the ground and then they'll pick it up and move it out. So it's gonna, you know, if you're not standing there on the 9th or the 16th, trust me, you won't have missed anything. It's probably about a 3 or 4 week process for them to move all the way across the bridge, and then it'll be come down. And then that, I mean, if you like big toys, that's when the big toys will come in and they'll start driving the new piles. And then after that, the goal is to be up and out of the ground again by March 1st. But I'll be more than happy to keep you posted. Like I said, if you're interested in going on a tour, especially once they start, let me know. As I said, onesies and twosies, took lots of flack for that, but for ones and twos, so that we can get you out there and look at it. It's really kind of a cool thing to watch those things come down.
Kevin, is there any, are they taking any photos, like, with each one of these phases as it goes up?
You know, right now, we will be doing that, and there is a dedicated website that you'll be able to go to and see that. The website's not up and live, but it's in progress. There will be some photos that will get put up periodically. Most of the work right now, because it's the relocation of infrastructure, a lot of it's below ground, nothing you would see. You know, there's really not a lot to take a picture of, you know, maybe a hole, literally, and that's about it. But that is part of the public outreach component that is part of our construction management contract with Quincy. So that'll be there.
It's historic. It's part of history for our community. And as kids are growing up, and, you know, they, you know, would have access to that information and photos and things like that. I'm not saying we go through that expense. I'm just asking.
And as a matter of fact, I've talked to Doug and Jody several times, and we've assured them that we will, you know, as we find out what keeps moving and when those kind of great opportunities come about, we're going to let them know. It literally kind of goes day to day. If a utility hasn't moved quite, you know, if they don't quite get as much done as we expect them to do one day, and so we're just, it's kind of an ongoing thing. But generally speaking, the 9th to 16th will be when it'll start coming down. Anything else I can answer?
You mentioned Consolidated Irrigation District.
Correct.
And it was mentioned in the past that the city is looking at expanding to the west side of the river. Can you give us some information as to where you're at with consolidation and the obstacles that we're facing with them that might keep us from going to the west? I mean, it's important for us to know, you know, where we're at.
So we just received their 10-page response to the EIR, so we have to pour through it to see exactly what they're challenging in the EIR. But because they have already threatened litigation, this will probably be a closed session item for council rather than an open session. But as soon as we review the 10-page, if we feel like there's something really imminent, we'll call a closed session and let you know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other?
Yeah, good evening. Wasn't planning on saying anything, but Paul just reminded me. A quick update on our solar project. The community center is completely finished this last week. So it is hooked up and ready to go, and we'll start seeing some energy savings from the community center. As for the other two projects, the wastewater treatment plant and City Hall and the police department, those are moving a little slower. They're a little bit more involved, and we're looking at hopefully having both of those projects completed by the end of the calendar year. But everything's moving along nicely, just a couple of hiccups that we worked through, so we're looking forward to that.
Good. And
reading the memo that you shared with council on the installation of the radios, meter radios, it's pretty significant, going from 40 to 60. It dropped from 40 to 60 to four or five a month.
Yeah.
With the installation of the new product. Wow. Okay. It's amazing.
Any further? Well, our next item is a closed session item, but before we go in that, I've got one thing to say to everybody. I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, because I won't see you then. So moving on to Government Code Section 54957. Is there any public comment? That case